Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today, we're talking about running and playing convention games. How does it work? What can you expect? Is it really any different than just gathering a group of friends for a game? Spoiler alert, not really. It's just a bit more complicated. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our new patron, Anne Reynolds. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thanks, Josh. So announcements are actually, I think this is the least amount of news and announcements.
I saw that in the notes.
So there is a convention coming up this weekend where I'll be at Capricorn. That, you know, if you want to be there, we've talked about that enough. So we're going over that one quickly. The Board Game Geek mini badge, I've submitted it. So now it's just pending approval. So I'll let you guys know when that's going on. And then the only other thing is our current contest, our February 2018 giveaway. It's not a contest, it's a giveaway. So we're giving away two copies of Charterstone. If you are interested, all you have to do is email us with the subject February giveaway and contest giveaway in my head again.
Right.
Email us with the subject February giveaway to tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Include your name and that you're in the U.S. If you're not in the U.S., then include the fact that you're willing to pay upwards of $100 for shipping. The deadline is February 23rd, and we will announce it on the podcast right after that one, which is 24, 25, 26, February 27th. That was helping me. I was doing calendar math in my head.
And remember, kids, it's not a contest. Wink.
It's not a contest.
It's not.
Email us by February 23rd. If you want to include, so we're at episode 77. Wow. That's a lot of episodes.
It is.
So, but I'm starting to look at that 100 and I want to do something like really cool for it. So yeah. I'm thinking like we could do a look back, or we could do like a questions episode. So
I just love that you come away to my round of way of thinking and you know that 100 is more important than 104.
100 is more important than 104.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You come around to my way of thinking.
No. I had a little bit too many drinks last night, and I somehow just said the wrong thing. No, so 2 years. 2 years is more important. 104 is more important. Damn it.
So if you want to know where that came from, go back to episode 50.
Please
or
do.
52.
Or 52. Oh,
I can't believe I just gave that to you.
I love it. All right. Let's get into our new Kickstarter segment. There's no bumper, no new. I should have some audio for it, like someone kicking something. Yeah, I don't know. Kickstart it. Anyway, I pulled the trigger on U-Boat, or U-Boot if you are reading it American style. This is the game we talked about last week, which is the real-time World War II submarine four-player with an app game. It looks amazing. Like it's 65 British pounds, so about $92, and everything in the box, it looks fantastic. So I had to back it. But now I have a huge problem because there's a ton of things coming out.
I was going to say, your list here is looking a little full.
Yeah, so I put on here, I have like five different things. I'm going to spend about 1 minute each talking on these, just kind of putting it on people's radars.
Getting out the stopwatch.
Yeah, if you're interested in such a thing. Warpgate is the first one, and I'm probably going to end up backing this. So what I'm doing is I'm watching these, but I'm also putting like, all right, which ones am I going to back? And, you know, just to try to make sure I fit them in before the deadline, because one Kickstarter a week, that's all I'm doing.
Right.
So, I will tell you which one I've backed. These are the ones I will probably back. Wargate. It's a 1-4 player, 40 to 90 minutes space area control victory point game. You remember all the jargon last week?
Oh,
I decided to really just go for it.
Mash them all together, yeah.
So, and it has dual cards, so dual use cards. So let me explain those things. So space area control, it's a space game and you're basically going around trying to control different sectors of the map. It's victory point based. So whoever gets to the most victory points, that's how you win. The dual use cards, it's kind of an interesting mechanic because you have four different slots on the board and you play these cards and it's a top and bottom and you choose one of those actions to do. And the later you play it in, it's like a 1x, 2x, 3x, 4x multiple. So it looked like a really kind of a cool way of action selection, card play, hand management type of thing.
Is it a little bit like Gloomhaven?
In the way the cards work, yes. I don't think there's a strict, if you take the top of this, you must take the bottom of that.
Yeah.
But there are two specific different actions on each card.
Yeah.
And you can choose which one. And it seems to me like every time you play through, or each time you do your actions, because they build on each other as you're going through the game, you can choose the top or bottom differently.
Okay.
So in one turn, maybe the top works great. And the next round, maybe the bottom is a better one. This one, the big box, if you get the base... big box plus all the mini expansions. So basically everything the game has to offer, it's like $69. If you just want the core name, it's $39. Core game, it's $39. This
You're one on fire today.
I know. Boom, look at me go. This one ends February 15th. So do not be surprised if you hear me saying I'm backing this one next week, because nothing else is going to pop up that's probably going to push this one off the list in the next week. So the next one, and it's... it's spelled G-E-N-T-E-S. I believe it's pronounced Gentes.
I would have said Gentes. But
Gentes.
That's what I would have said.
Maybe yeah. Gentes. Yeah. It is a 2-to-4-player Civ building game. Plays about 90 minutes. So it's six. You play six turns. And it, again, it's try to get the most points in six turns. This one's really cool. So it's action selection. Man, I'm huge with the jargon. I'm just this. I have to do that, right? Because I only have a minute. Stop. There's no actual stopwatch. Thanks, God.
I was going to say, you're failing.
So the action selection on this is really cool. So you choose, take an action, and it has a certain number of hourglasses on it. And the actions you can do in a particular round will depend on how long those actions take. So you have, like, I think seven different time slots. So if I take an action that takes two time slots, it's those two. And I can take another action that only takes one. I take another action that takes three, and then I'm done. You know, so I can't fit anything else there. So there's this optimizing, do I want this long action that's really cool, or do I want like three of these short ones? And then at the end of every round, that track clears. And it looks like there's a way to extend how much time you have, because there's little lock icons on the time track. But the gameplay looks very straightforward. And it is either a game that looks dated or a game that looks really cool if you're into retro-looking games. So it has all these different worker tiles, and the artwork on it is... I don't want to say Egyptian, but it reminds me of Egyptians because it's like these flat side views of your workers and stuff.
Okay.
So you place out your
little
pieces.
Little hieroglyphic-esque.
They feel hieroglyphic. They're not hieroglyphic, but they feel to me in aspect that they're
so
showing.
So it's not like Civilization, the video game, where you have like different types of civilization. You can be like Gandhi or like, you know, someone from Europe.
Yeah. I think you're all starting on an even playing field, but depending on the actions you take, you will build up your civilization. But you are trying to build different cities and optimize like your culture and stuff like that.
Okay.
So that's why, you know, civilization-esque type of thing. This one, the normal version is $45. The deluxified version is $59. OTG something, I've drawn a blank on it, but the publisher who does this does a deluxified version, and if you're doing the Kickstarter, I highly recommend the deluxified version because it's upgraded components.
Yeah, of course Chris does.
Well, if you're gonna do the Kickstarter anyway, you might as well do the one that you can't get in retail later, because you could get this one in the retail store.
Oh, you're saying
later.
That you just can't get the deluxe version afterwards?
Right.
Oh,
so
now I'm with you.
So I would recommend that. And this one is pretty much on my must get list. So this is, but this ends on February 16th. So notice one's on 15th, one's on 16th. So I have to balance that.
Right.
Here's the one that kills me because I don't think I can back it, but I want to make sure everyone knows it's out there. And that's the new Zaya reprinting. So Zaya, Legends of the Drift System, is this 4X space exploration game. 4X being exploration, exploit, exterminate, X something or other. and I will call it a sandbox game because you can essentially you have a spaceship and you can fly anywhere in the universe. You're trying to collect victory points. I think they're fame points or something like that. In the game, and you can do it. You can do it by trading. You can, you know, pick up resources from one planet, sell them on another planet. You can go after pirates. You can shoot each other. There's mission cards you can go and try to do. So there's so many ways of getting victory points in this game that that's what I kind of think of as a sandbox game. But this one is releasing a new mini expansion, which is just a deck of cards that has, you know, more events and more activities. Really what they're doing, though, is giving you the opportunity to buy this game because it's really expensive for them to produce. It comes with pre-painted ship minis. It has metal coins. It essentially defaults to all of the stretch goals from the original campaign. So if you are interested in Zaya and you haven't been able to find it, It is on Kickstarter now. It ends on the 20th. If you just want the mini expansion, which is the new item here, that's just $15. If you want everything, all the stretch goals, both expansions, all of the extra stuff, it's $145. And this is one of those games where I think I almost was tempted to spend $145 to get everything, even though I already have everything. That's how good this game is. All right, one more. This one's for Kitty.
I was going to say, if you don't back this, I'm going to back this because it sounds awesome.
This is sort of my thing where I'm trying to maybe get you guys to start backing stuff. I was going to
say, you're tricking me into this.
He's trying to push his habit on us.
Yeah.
He wants friends who do the same thing.
But this one's not very expensive, so it's not...
This one is basically a couple decks of cards. So it's called Herbalism. I'll summarize at the end. So Herbalism, it's sort of a cross between Pandemic and Herbology. But really not like any of those. So the way this game works, it's a memory deduction game where it's kind of like Clue.
So sounds great.
Yes. So what happens, you have all of these little herbs and plants and stuff, and you're going to remove two of them from the solution deck. And you're going through the game trying to figure out what two herbs are needed to cure this disease. So, and then you're playing cards, and essentially that's what you're trying to accomplish. So that's the whole game.
So like trial and error, like which of these things will come together to...
There's mechanics. So like, I actually don't know how many, but say there were 12 different herbs. Mm-hmm. You take two of them out. So anytime you look at those 10 that are remaining, you know that those are not part of the cure. And we are all getting little bits of knowledge, and we can all share with each other knowledge. You know, like, you know one, I know one, I'll swap and maybe figure this out.
So is it co-op or is it semi-co-op?
It's felt to me like a semi-co-op.
Where, like, one person wins, but you have to work together.
To work together to get there.
To get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not 100% sure. Like, so the How to Play video wasn't super, super clear on it, but it looked really good.
We'll just have to get it.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing. It's for 3 to 4 players, which... We're going to do an entire episode on 3-player minimum games because there's a problem with 3-player minimum games. You don't always have 3 players, right?
Yeah.
But it's for 3 to 4 players. It plays in 15 to 30 minutes. It's only $19, and it's essentially it's a stack of cards and a few tokens. So it's super easy to set up and play, and it looks really interesting to me.
Yeah, and it looks like it's the first of 4 games that are coming out in this. $59 pledge will get you all of them as they come out.
Yep. This is a new company. So it's all in the same size, these small box games. And this is the first of 4. So if you pledge $59 for this one and the next 3 sight unseen, then you get basically a game and a half for free because it would be $80 otherwise.
Yeah.
So this ends on February 21st. Kitty's going to create a Kickstarter account.
I already have one.
I do want to give a quick mention, CO2, if you know of it. It is hitting Kickstarter tomorrow, and that's a reprint of a game that's been out of print for quite some time. I will go into more detail next week on that one. So if you're wondering what games I just talked about, it was Warp Gate, Gentis, Zaya, and Herbalism. And just so I can take the spotlight, because a little bit longer, because I like talking, Sam did ask a question about, is like, will your new 1 Kickstarter a week limit change what you look for in Kickstarter? And I just want to answer that right now, because absolutely, it's actually more fun. So now that I'm just like making a list of things I want to watch and pay attention to, and I'm not just like, okay, I'll buy it and worry about it later, I have to be a lot more like... aware of what games, how do I want to back? What do I want to back? Is this worth it? And it really is making it more fun.
It's more of an adventure instead of just like a click done.
Exactly.
You get to have like the excitement, the anticipation of like getting ready to hit the button.
I'm watching the playthrough videos. It's like, is this a game that I would really be willing to play? Does it replace a game that I already have that I want? You know, so like, you know, Warp Gate. Is it like a Zaya replacement? Is it going to, you know, replace Zaya if I get this? Is it better then? Would I want to play one or the other? It kind of makes me think, what should I do? Otherwise, normally Warp Gate I look at and like, I love the art, bye. And so this just really makes me think about it a bit more, and I like it. I like
That's
it a
amazing.
Lot.
That's amazing. You're getting better, Chris.
I'm getting
There's
better.
Hope for you.
All right, to that end, my review for Kickstarter this week is Farlight. I backed this one back in March of 2017. It was a $25 game, It was estimated ship date around October of 2017, and it came in right around on time. This is a medium-sized box game. I would say probably a foot on each side-ish. This is a light space game where there's no combat. So essentially what it is you're trying to construct a science vessel. And on your science vessel, you'll have pods that create research, pods that create biology or food. You'll have workers, and you'll have engines. The goal is to go through and complete missions. These missions have requirements for each of these different resources. So you need 3 science, 2 engines, and some food, and then you can complete this mission and you get victory points for it. It's a blind bidding game, so you have 6 bidding tokens from 0 to 5, and you're bidding on different actions on the board or parts that you want to add to your ship. And everyone's bidding on these things in order.
Ooh, I like the bidding mechanic. It's always fun.
Yeah. So if Josh and I get in a bidding war, only one of us is actually going to win this that particular thing.
So I can clean up and get the rest of the stuff.
Exactly. So I played this 2 players with Sydney, and in 2 players, we were either really fighting against one thing a lot, or we were like completely just staying out of each other's way and gathering all the stuff we want. It's cool, though, because you have the ship parts, and when you buy the ship parts, you have to add them to your ship. If you've ever played Galaxy Trucker and you had to build your ship with Galaxy Trucker, it's a similar concept. So each ship part has connections on either top, bottom, or left or right, and they all have to connect to everything else on your ship. So if you can't fit something, you can't use that ship part. There is an action that says, I want to just get rid of ship parts so I can start rebuilding things. It plays pretty quick. We played it, and the box says 45 minutes. I think it took about 45 minutes. I will say I enjoyed this as a light, blind bidding ship building. I like the idea of building the ship. Sydney did not like it as much. So she's like, yeah, whatever. I'd rather play other games. So that's sort of a mixed review on this one. Everyone knows, well, maybe not everyone, but everyone will know as soon as I say it. I'm trying to clean out my collection so I can put more games in there. So this one might find its way into a future giveaways winner box as an extra game. That's how I'm going to get rid of a lot of these. So I'm
how
also...
How many red stickies do you have on your games? Those were the ones that you had never played, am I right?
Yeah, I didn't count them because there's too many, but...
you didn't want to face up to the truth of, oh yeah. My God,
how if many? If I had to estimate, I would say there's 40 or 50 of them.
Wow.
So the collection is probably in the neighborhood of 250. I'm just throwing out numbers now. There's a lot. It's at least a third of the games I own have not played yet. So I'm working on it.
That's good. Well, now you know that you've exposed the problem and you can do something about it. I like it.
All right, Josh, let's get out of Kickstarter.
Indeed. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Our first one is from Eric, a new listener with some advice for Kitty. My wife and I have a new 2-month-old baby, and the best advice I have is to pick a game such as Gloomhaven that you can play for a few months without needing to learn anything new. Or, of course, have a baby that actually sleeps would be a good idea.
We've been pretty lucky with sleep so far, but yeah, I will definitely keep that in mind. I keep thinking we're going to open our copy of Charterstone, and then I fall asleep. So
yeah, especially in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It can get exhausting.
Yeah, we'll give it another couple of weeks and see where I'm at.
Yep. And then we still have Pandemic Legacy Season 2 that we'll work through.
Oh, yeah.
So
much guilt of my lack of gaming, but so much enjoyment of the sleep I've been getting.
Yeah.
All right. So we have some feedback from Sam regarding Jason's question last week. He asked if he was becoming a game snob, and Sam replies, I think that's just part of the natural evolution of a gamer. More stimulus can lead to more change. If he's exploring lots of information about gaming and new games through YouTube and BGG, then his outlook on older games is bound to change. 3 years ago, I only knew a handful of games and probably played only a few mechanisms. Becoming part of the community has really expanded my knowledge of what's out there and evolved my tastes for gaming. Now I have friends who are serious gamers and friends who are casual gamers. One suggestion would be to share a podcast that you like with your gaming group. And even if it's only one or two of them, that give it a listen. It may stimulate others to evolve and try more Cult of the New games.
Let's see, a recommended podcast. We'll leave that to listeners. Also, Kitty, you got a lot of congratulations.
I did. Thank you, everyone, for all of your well wishes. We're so excited and, you know, kicking off this big adventure in our lives.
So. There's even a thread on BGG about it.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. I'll have to check out the thread. I saw some of the congratulations on other places, but I'm not always the most active on BGG.
And to that end, there is a quick question specifically for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read it. So, Kitty, now that you have a new baby, what games are you looking forward to playing with him? And are there any games you want to save from today to play with him in the future? Now, this was a paraphrase of several questions which were essentially the same thing. So thank you for everyone who asked this, because I think it's an interesting question.
Some of the games I'm really looking forward to playing are some of the classics from my childhood. Things like Don't Break the Ice and Cooties and like those Candyland, the classic games. And I'm really looking forward to exploring new children's games because I don't know what's out there. And as he grows, I'm going to grow a gaming collection that will grow with us as a family. And I'm pretty excited to explore. So if anyone has good recommendations that their kids really like, I know that he's a little bit young to start now, but it's never too early to start building up a good collection.
It's not a board game, but I still remember from my childhood playing, I think we called it Sleeping Lions. It was like a birthday party game where everyone would lie down on the floor, close their eyes, and like the last person to open their eyes would win. So it was like this waiting game because you didn't know.
Love this game because it sounds like a great way to keep a group of children quiet for a really long period of time. It's like the quiet game, and but better.
We loved it, but we didn't realize we were being completely manipulated into calming down and being chill.
That's how it works. Yeah, that's an interesting thing because I think when we want to share things with our kids, we're thinking about the things that we learned when we were a kid, which really just propagates those like classic games. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if I'm thinking of a game today that I want to like save for my future kids, I can't think of a single one that I'd like, well, there's probably going to be something better at that point. But that's also my Cult of the Newness speaking.
Yeah.
But Gloomhaven. I have two unopened boxes of Gloomhaven that I'm tucking away. That might be something I pull out, you know, when they're 5, 6 years old and be like, all right, let's go kill some demons.
Yeah, 5 and 6 year olds. That's their level.
Alex, my kids are going to be smart. All right, let's get on topic.
In this episode, we're talking about convention gaming, both how to run a game and what to expect when signing up and playing a game at a convention. From the very small to the very large, we'll look at the different conventions and talk about how you can get more involved.
All right. So this one is actually a combination of two topics that we got recommended. So one was from Michael Yanikowski.
Right. That's how we normally say it.
And the other one was John Lewis. I don't normally have to say it.
I know.
So both of you, if you want to email me, send me your t-shirt size and give me your address, and I will get a t-shirt out to you. I should note that this is well supplies last and well sizing last too.
Yeah.
We're going to go through them pretty quick. So Michael's recommendation was gaming at cons. He says, I've been getting emails from summer gaming conventions. Something in all of those emails has attracted my attention. They are asking for event submissions. I have never led an event at a convention before. I know you have organized some events at conventions. Could you have an episode where you discuss the planning process for submitting an event and putting it on the convention, or on at the convention? So yes, we can. And then the other side of this was from John. He says, this is an interesting topic for me, though I have virtually no experience with it. I have a very busy schedule and I'm introverted, so I don't get to go play really at all my local game stores, to go to conventions, etc. I also don't get to play with my group as much as I'd like. So playing at a game store seems like it could be a good way to get more games in. If I get to at some point, are there general accepted rules of etiquette or norms for gaming with strangers? Are there ways to tell before you start the game whether the group you're playing with will be enjoyable?
If only.
So this is actually a really big topic, and it's early. Like I mentioned in the board game thread, it's like, oh, convention season is upon us. Nowadays, there is no convention season. It's a year-round thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I go to a convention every month, sometimes more than one. And sometimes we run games at them. Sometimes I play games at them. Sometimes I just go to look at it. But I do want to open this up to a little bit. So we'll talk a little bit like how you would play at a local game store as well, because I think a lot of the same things apply there. So let's start with running games at the convention. We'll get to the submission process, but Kitty and Josh, this last year, I think this was your first time of actually running games at a convention.
Yes.
Right? Yep. So what happened that you guys didn't expect when like running a new game, and the players, the tables, like just in general, what your expectations were going in and then what actually happened? What were the differences there?
Ooh, I mean, I think I was very nervous going into it because I'd never done it before, and I was just thinking, I really need to like have my all of my stuff together and really know what I'm talking about. And I guess I'd done enough prep and I played the game before a couple of times, so that helped. But I guess they were just very like understanding, and I thought, to begin with, like, oh, if I make a mistake or if I'm a little bit shaky on something, like that would be terrible. And, you know, people would be upset or confused, like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But they were very understanding and very chill about it. And so I think it was nice to be like, oh, actually, it's okay. We can kind of learn as we go along together, and it won't be the end of the world if, like, I don't know, like 100% of the rules, like the back of my hand.
Yeah, I'd say be familiar with the rule book more than be familiar with the rules. So if you have a question, you know where to look for the answer fast.
Oh, that's a really good tip. I did not do that.
Yeah. So, you know generally where like, oh, I can find this on the setup page, or, oh, there's exceptions to the rules at the back kind of stuff. Also, pick games that you're familiar with is very important. If you haven't played a game in a while and you're trying to teach it to strangers, it can be super intimidating. But if you know the game, it's so much easier. So Chris picked all of the games for our Game Hole Con, and then he picked some that I think Josh would have been really good at teaching, but I was not as good at. So I felt a little bit intimidated there. But then when it came to the games that I really knew, like Scythe and Imhotep, I was just like, oh, I've got this. Yep. No problem. Terraforming Mars, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. I had that same experience like this week. Like I had a gaming group that wanted to play XCOM, and they're all, they don't like play games really that much, but they had played the video game of XCOM. And so they're really excited about trying board games and getting into it. And XCOM has like this cool app that can like take you through all the rules. And so it doesn't have a rule book.
Yeah.
And that was the intimidating thing for me, was I'd played the game once with Chris, but he had explained everything and I had sort of kind of gone along for the ride. But we'd only got through like maybe half a game.
I was going to say, I was playing that too. Yeah. We didn't finish the game even.
Right. And so I was like looking up all these videos beforehand, and I was really intimidated, and it didn't help that I didn't have the rule book. Like we had to go through the tutorial, and it was fine, and it led us through, and we got there in the end. But it was a bit nerve-wracking for me. I was like, oh, I don't have a book now.
I know, you don't have like the shield to hide, like, oh, I have this, and you could just hold up the magic rule book and be like, even if you don't know what you're looking for in there, you look like you're accomplishing something.
Right.
Yeah, I will say XCOM is the exception to that. Like it doesn't have a rule book, and that is probably one of my biggest complaints too. It's great that it's app-based. It's great that it tries to teach you as it goes, but just give me a reference book.
Right? Like, I would love to have both.
Yeah. So Fantasy Flight actually usually does, like, a quick start rule book and then a reference book, and now they're splitting it into two. I think XCOM really needs a reference book so you can look up the details of a specific rule.
Yeah.
But XCOM aside, one of the things that I thought was interesting, especially Game Hole Con, was the number of people that had never played the game before.
I think almost every player I had not played the game before.
Yep. And so I will say, if you don't know the rules perfectly, pretend you do. And they're not going to know the difference. So you can go through, and if like you've taught it a certain way and they're playing it, and at the end of the game, it's like, okay, I didn't want to interrupt the game, but this particular rule was wrong. So if you play it again, that.
Because I'm a really good actor and I fooled you into thinking I knew exactly what I was doing.
Or if it's halfway through and it's like, oh, wait, we messed this up, and you can fix it without really throwing everything off. Okay. Sometimes playing with the wrong rule set is all the way through is better than playing with a different rule set the first half and the second half. So don't stress too much about mastery, since most people are, especially at convention games, they are going to try new things.
I was going to say, it's just dipping their toes in to see, maybe I want to buy this game, maybe I want to add it, to my collection. And you know, they're just looking for the flavor of the game. They're not looking for like a, I'm going to win this experience.
Yep. So to that end, build in time that you are going to teach people this game.
Yeah.
And we did an entire episode way back when in the 20s or 30s, I think, on teaching and learning new games. Try to incorporate the game teaching into the first turn as opposed to spending a half hour explaining the game and then, you know, starting the game, because everyone's forgetting at that point. And honestly, game explanations are sort of boring. So if it's the faster you can get them into the action, the better.
Me and Spencer always talk about how our eyes glaze over every time you start talking about how to play. And I was just like, not listening.
So hopefully you know how to play the game, at least to the point where the board can be set up when people sit down.
I was going to say that's my next recommendation, is have the players ready to go. So the pieces are in front of the board setup is all done, so that when you're giving the explanation, they can see what's going on. They don't have to set up their own, unless they're there early. If they're there early, I make them set up their own player boards, which can be helpful because you learn a little bit about how things work, but also sitting down and just having everything set up for you makes it go so much faster.
Yep. So that would be, the biggest tip. Get there early, set up the game ahead of time. If you're running it at the convention or even at a game store, if you want someone, you're at a game store and there's a particular game you want to play, have it all set up. Because if there's a game that's set up and you're like, hey, I'm looking for players, and they can just sit down and start going, it's going to be a lot easier for someone to just say, okay, let's do this. Now, player types. So, and this kind of goes into player etiquette as well. So there's a lot of different types of players. We're sitting with three different types of players right now.
Yeah.
There are certain players that will want to win. This is the first time they've ever played the game, and they still are playing to win. Whatever it is, they want to win.
Oh, yeah.
they're gonna ask for the rule book. They're going to be looking up things and not telling anyone else what they're looking up or why they're looking it up. Or they might be like, okay, what is this and what is this? And just asking a whole bunch of questions before the game even starts. Those players can be tricky to work with when there's a group there that is also trying to learn and they're a little bit more casual. This is a little bit of, on the etiquette side, if you're learning a new game with a group of players, just relax. Let it go. Play it. Don't expect to win your very first game. I say that all the time. Never expect to win the game the first time you play it.
Fine, Dad.
However, if you do want to win, that's fine. Just, you know, maybe after the initial explanation is given, ask to say, hey, can I see the rule book? And then you can look up those rules on your own time, and the other people may not care as much.
That's my move.
Yep.
I'm always holding the rule book, as you know.
Yep. And so do I. I mean, I do that too. And one of the things I do as well is if I'm reading through and it gets to a point that I think is important that we haven't covered, I may actually speak up. It's like, oh, this is an interesting rule. You can only do this if you have that. You know, something like that. So I'll try to share that with everybody. But if you really want to win, you can hide that rule and just pull it out when it benefits you the best. I don't recommend doing that.
If you're the person teaching the game too, make sure you highlight those rules that are easy to forget. I did this a couple times and I still feel like, you know, players, when they find out like, oh, I've been missing this thing the whole time, why didn't you say that? It feels really bad as the game runner to be like, I did. But, you know, like, so really highlight those, like, if you have a blue card, you can use it every turn, or make sure that you're tapping your resources every time, whatever it is. Make sure that you're really hitting those important points.
That's a really good point, because I've played games with Chris before where, you know, there was a lot of rules and I didn't hear them all, and then he'll do something that completely demolishes me. I'm like, I didn't even know you could do that.
Right?
What? Like, and it kind of leads me to like this idea of maybe like is pulling your punches a bit in terms of if you're playing with the players and it's a competitive game, is that okay? Because I, you know, when I sat down and played and ran a game recently, I wanted to do that. Like, I wanted it to be a close match and I wanted to, you know, make sure they're having a good time. And I think part of having a good time is feeling like you're in it and that you can compete and that you can maybe win. And so I was just purposefully taking like suboptimal moves. In the end, it didn't matter because we ended up somehow crushing them anyway, and I felt terrible about it. But you know, is that okay? What do you think?
I think that playing to the skill level of the group is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're teaching a game at a convention and this is... So actually, this gets into another question. Are you playing the game or not? So there's a couple reasons why you may want to run a game at a convention. One, you may just want to introduce people to a game. And that's what we were doing at GameholeCon. We weren't playing any of those games. We were just introducing people to those games. So the entire table were new players. They were all basically on the same playing field. Someone might have played once before a long time ago or something like that. So we were watching over those games. When we were at EverCon, we were actually playing those games. So the Blood Rage games Josh is referring to, we had two players and we're like, well, there's three of us, so we can play a five-player game. You know, let's go ahead and do this. Now, they were the newer players and they didn't win, but I think they still enjoyed it and they learned the game and they were able to say, yes, we like this game and we want to play this game again. In that case, I don't know that I wasn't really pulling punches there. I was just kind of working in my own engine and seeing how that worked. But what I did do for that is I leveled the playing field just in general. So that game, Blood Rage, has drafting, and it drafts every three ages. The very first thing you do is you draft cards. If you've never played a game before, you have no idea what you're drafting or why you're drafting something. So I always modify that when I'm playing with new players to break up the cards into their three different types, and then I randomly deal two of each type to everybody.
It's actually suggested in the rule book for new players.
That's their opening hand, and then they get to draft in second and third age.
Yeah.
I always call out whenever I do a learning rule like that, we are going to do it this way. Typically, you would do that.
Yeah.
Any game, and I pretty much do this for, there's a ton of them where you have to choose something, choose your faction, choose the board, choose your position on the set, any of those things. In the very first game, I always just randomize them. I just hand them out and whatever is whatever. Because otherwise you're like, well, I don't know really what's going on here, and it can get tricky. So I think if you can make the rules normalize everything a little bit, that's good. If not, and you're the expert player and you're playing with a bunch of new players, don't destroy them.
Yeah, like if it's a one versus many or something and you're the one.
The one versus many, you can totally destroy them.
Really?
Yes. But if it's one versus all, like free for all, that's when you don't want to be the one person that's destroying everybody else.
Okay. So you want to destroy them because you want them to enjoy the challenge?
They win or lose together in that case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm thinking as well of like if you're doing role-playing games, like, you know, you wouldn't like, you know, kill off people really quickly just for the sake of it if they're new to like Dungeons and Dragons or something.
You're bringing up the next point, which I'll get to in a second. I think Kitty had it.
If you are playing and it's an asymmetrical game, choose the harder race for yourself.
Oh, that's a good one.
We were playing 7-player Scythe, and I felt really bad because everyone was new players. And it's like, put your most experienced players in these two factions because they're the new factions. And it was just the last two people to the table got those ones. But they did really well, so it wasn't so bad. But if you can put yourself in that position, give yourself kind of the harder start, it makes it feel more fair without feeling like you're actually pulling punches on people.
Yeah. Now, with role-playing games, that's kind of its own separate thing completely. But I know a lot of people will go to conventions to play a role-playing game, try it for the first time, or run a role-playing game. In a role-playing game, as the game master, you never want to be like an antagonistic game master. You're not trying to kill the players. You're trying to create a story at the entire table that everyone's going to enjoy. So that's sort of that's an entire show topic of its own.
Right. Yeah.
Which Kitty and I were talking before, and I think we're going to end up doing a RPGs 101,
you know, yeah,
going from zero to, oh, this is actually a really fun game.
Yeah.
So we will do that one. But for convention-wise, when you're looking at role-playing games at convention that you might want to sit down and play, look for games. Organized play games are always great because they're super, super open and welcome. Not every game has organized play. The big ones are Dungeons & Dragons, obviously, and Pathfinder. Both of those are very... You know, organized play is very easy to get into. It's
very set up introductory level.
Yep. And it's set up to bring new players in.
Yeah.
Yep. And as you go up, it gets harder and harder. So the higher ranks, you have more things you can do. I would highly recommend that if it's your first role-playing game ever, play Dungeons & Dragons. It's very simple, easy to learn, and it's a really, really open and friendly community. Pathfinder is a lot more crunchy detail. It's not as easy to learn, And because it's been around for a while and like a long time, like it's almost 10, 15 years now, if you count Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition, which is where it came from, it can have players that are really, really intense. So that can be a little bit more off-putting. They're super friendly still, I'm just saying. But D&D tends to be a little more casual. So signing up for games. If you want to run a game, and I'll use Origins, Gen Con, and Gamehole Con as examples, because they kind of all have a little difference there. If you go to Origins, they all have, go to their webpage, they all have an event submission. So you're going to say, I'm going to submit an event. Sometimes these events are going to be paid. Sometimes they're going to be free. One thing that is important to note is if it's a free event, there is a high likelihood that people will just not show up for it. So you can be like, all right, I'm going to only ask for 5 players because I want to be the 6th person. So you can do that. But if you want like a minimum player count of 3 or something, whatever, it's possible that half of those 5 players don't show up because they didn't pay for the ticket. So it's easier to just kind of skip out on that event. So if you have an event where it's a $2 ticket, you can be pretty confident that all of those players will show up. This is just kind of like a little behind the scenes thing. That's why Gamehole Con charges for all their event tickets, because it makes people show up to the events. But EverCon, for example, didn't charge for event tickets. And we had several no-shows at the different tables where we had 1 or 2 people and then nobody showed up. So just expect that. Just because you've sold tickets for free doesn't mean someone's going to use them. So anyway, you're going to pick a time slot. You're going to say what it is. If you want experienced players and you expect to play, put that in the event things. Like, this is going to be a competitive play of Blood Rage. So experienced players only. You know, I'm going to be at the... You don't have to put I'm going to be at the table, but if you want to be there and you want to play a hardcore game, put that in the description that that's what this is. It's not a teaching game. If you're okay with people teaching, or you're like, you know, I can teach... I'll teach you, then it's like no experience necessary is the term to choose, which is also completely fine. And that's sort of the default. Everyone's going to expect no experience. If you're running the game and you want to play, like I say, it's up to you. Just be a little careful what Josh mentioned. You know, you might not want to destroy them.
Yeah.
Also, don't take the game too seriously. It may be a game you love. Say Scythe is your favorite game ever, and you want to teach 6 new people to do it, they do not have the passion you have for that game. So you want to dial it down a couple notches.
Yeah.
How about the, you know, because is it the same with, like, we put on the live show, right, Gen Con and Origins. And, you know, there was some issues in terms of like scheduling and stuff. So is it the same at these big conventions with, you know, when you're setting up a game to play? Like, can you suddenly find yourself in a different room, or you've been double booked? Because, I mean, that happened to us in that scenario. But was that specific to our type of event or not?
All of these conventions are run by volunteers. So behind the scenes, somebody is trying to make sure all these things line up. People are submitting things, and it has, you know, suggest or your preferred time, day and time. And they are trying to make sure that that day and time is met. Some of them will have a secondary day and time so that they can have a little bit of wiggle room. There's only so many tables at the convention. You know, everyone wants to run Friday morning at 10 o'clock. Not really. Nobody wants to run a Friday morning at 10 o'clock. But if there were a bunch of people that wanted to do that, you know, they can't fit everyone all in that time slot. You know, Saturday at you know, 2 is probably a far more common time, right? Everyone wants to run Saturday at 2. It's like, well, we need some 10 a.m. games. So they may email you and say, hey, can you do a 10 a.m. game instead of a 2 p.m. game? So they're going to try to fix that and make it work. And sometimes they're going to be over-optimistic and say, okay, well, we have all these games for Saturday at 2. Great, we'll figure out where tables are. And then they get to the convention. Because remember, our scheduling is happening months before the room's actually set up. And there's 3 less tables than they expected. And now they have these scheduling conflicts. It tends not to happen at the bigger conventions. You know, Origins, Gen Con tends not to happen, even though it happened for us at, I believe it was Gen Con that we had scheduling issues.
It was Origins, and it wasn't a scheduling issue. It was a room change issue where it was just some finagling.
Yeah. So, and they worked with us very, you know, closely to try to get things all situated and straightened up. But, So, yeah, there could be some conflicts there.
I guess that's why I wanted to bring it up. I think it's, you know, get there early and kind of, you know, make sure that you know, like, okay, the room's free, or, oh, wait, hang on, there's someone else setting up in the exact same room. You know, I need to go and talk to someone to sort this out. So that sort of thing can help.
Yeah, if we're doing... doing a live show is a little bit trickier because we're trying to reserve an entire room.
Yep.
Doing a table game, typically they have table numbers,
right,
and they know how many tables are going to have. So it tends not to be as big a problem for that. With EverCon was pretty easy. We set it up. With GameholeCon, this is the one where I'm like, okay, we're going to be super ambitious. We're going to have three tables and be running games basically from 10 to 6 every day, and it's going to be awesome. And what I thought we could do is teach the rules, start the game, and walk away and not have to worry about it.
Nope.
No. If you're running a game, even if it's a board game or whatever, expect that you are going to be at that table whether you're playing or not, because their new players going to be, they didn't teach themselves the rules, so you are the rule book. And if you need a rule, who do you go to? The rule book, who is just talking to you and, hey, we have this question. Hey, how does this work? Make judgments. Don't worry about, you know, searching BGG or something like that for the exact rule. Just make your best judgment and go in that situation. But expect that you're going to be monitoring the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least be in the area. You don't have to sit at the table the whole time. So we had two tables going at the same time almost all weekend. And Chris was off doing some other stuff. And I would just kind of stand in between the two tables and look for hands flagging me down for a while there. So that works too.
That's pretty good multitasking.
It was a little crazy.
It was, we were starting two board games. You weren't there.
Yep.
And I was actually running a D&D game at the same time. So that's when I was like, not there as well. So that was, it was fun. Friday at 2, I think it was. That was the critical moment.
Luckily, a few people did not show up to one of the games. So I could get Scythe started while we were waiting for people to show up for Sheriff of Nottingham. And they just never did. So it was a really low-key game of that. And so worked out okay.
So board game etiquette. Show up 5 minutes early to the table.
Yes.
Especially at conventions. Get there a little bit early, because as a game runner, you want to know how many players you have so you can get things going as quickly as possible. If you show up late to that game, then what often happens is it triggers a reset of everything.
Yeah.
So, and by everything, I mean, I could be 10 minutes into the rules. Now I have to start over. That is frustrating. If you show up late to a game, I would recommend tell the table, don't start over. I'll pick up what I need to, you know, when, as we're playing the game.
Yep.
Maybe you're going to start a little bit behind. You're not going to know every rule or whatever, but you showed up late. So
that's the risk you run.
Exactly.
Showing up late.
Yep. Be polite about it. You don't want people, your 10 minutes late causes, you know, if there's five other people at the table, that's an extra literally 100 minutes that's spent, because it's 10 minutes that they just spent. They have to spend another 10 minutes and then they can continue on with their day, and you multiply that by five, and really it's time math. It all works. So try to show up a little bit early. If you're playing a new game, watch a YouTube video on it. You know, the rules are going to be explained to you, but you might as well watch a video on it just so you have kind of a foundation for those rules to get built on. This goes for game store as well. You know,
there's
a new game you want to play at a game store, you know, you want to go set that game up, watch a video on it, let people know. It's like, I haven't played it. Do you want to learn this game with me? They'll be like, sure. Or you go in, like a game store, oftentimes they have open gaming nights where you just walk in and someone's setting up a game. If it's something interesting, go over. It's like, are you looking for another player? You know, that's all you have to do. And it's like, yes or no. Great. You know, so it's really not hard. Board gamers gamers in general are pretty open and friendly.
Don't psych yourself out too. Like, that's always my thing is like, if I like, oh no, I have to go over there and like ask if they're looking for players. Like, just what's the worst thing that happens? They say no, and I walk away and everything's fine. Like, don't get too worried about what people are going to think or whatever. Just, you know.
Or maybe you should be a little bit worried about the experienced gamers, because I saw in the notes that you were like, experienced gamers can be tricky. You want to regale us with some reasons why that might be the case?
So it kind of goes along with the same thing. So if you have a passion for the game, those can be some of the less fun games to play with, unless you have that same passion. I remember a game of Mage Knight at a convention once, and as soon as the game started getting set up, and this guy, he pulled out his Mage Knight set, and every expansion, every this. And I was like, we're going to use this optional rule. Here's this sheet here that tells you how to do this. And I'm just like, oh no, what have I gotten myself into? 3.5 hours later, the game still wasn't completed. That game also takes forever. And it's just like, I knew right that it's not that he was bad. It was that our levels of where we wanted to be in this game were so different that I was not going to be able to enjoy the game at the same level that he wanted to bring the game up to.
Right.
So that's where I'm like, the closer an experience levels you can have the entire table for a new game, the better. But you don't always have that option, right? You don't always have that choice. So maybe if you're a little hesitant, this is the first time you've played a con game, play a shorter game. Don't play a Mage Knight or a Scythe or something. Play something that can play in 1.5 hours as opposed to something that's going to take 2.5 hours.
That makes sense. And it must be kind of a bit of a holiday for you because you're always the person who is doing these demos in your in your life and your gaming groups. You're always teaching the game to people. And so it must be nice to kind of sit down and someone else has set up the board and someone else is telling the rules and you just get to play for like 30 minutes to...
I hate it.
Figure it out. You do?
Yeah. So I'm... And I tell people this. I'm very shy. So I'm shy until the floor has been given to me. And then I'm fine. I'm like no problem at all. But walking around, like when I was walking around with you guys at Gen Con and Origins and you like wanted to sit down and demo things, I'm like afraid of sitting down and demoing a game. I much rather watch because it's that commitment fear of sitting down and committing time.
Which is why we always demo like the easy games, like the quick. It looks colorful and fun. We're just going to sit down. It'll be 20 minutes. Don't worry. We don't sit down and demo. Have you ever noticed the long games? Yeah.
But I noticed. So wait. So I know. You're worried about commitment. I don't understand. Like what's the nightmare scenario?
It's not necessarily like the commitment, like time commitment. Like, oh, I'm committing myself to something I'm not going to enjoy. But I'm also just very shy.
Right.
Like I don't. Like sitting there in a group of people that I don't know yet.
You don't know them right.
It's
like an awkward off-putting situation. Yeah, it's awkward, right? You feel socially anxious, you know, right? Yeah, I can understand. I get those feelings too, right?
So if the group of us is walking around, maybe that's another way you can get over this too.
Yeah.
So we were playing, I think, Potion Explosion.
Yeah.
And it was the whole table was just us.
Yeah.
And that was fun. We had one person teaching and it was us. We're learning this new game. And that was completely fine.
And that's what I was thinking about because I was remembering those times where we'd all sit down as a group, you know, it's your friends. And you don't have to tell us how to play this game. You can just play along. And that must be a rare thing for you.
Yeah, it is. Now, I said I'm shy. I don't like doing it. I have forced myself to do it this year and I've never regretted it. So the Mage Knight thing happened a couple of years ago. And like I said, that was a one-off story. It was a memorable experience where I can say that was an experience.
Right.
Typically, though, sitting down, you play the game. At the end, if you're demoing games at conventions, and they're usually trying to sell you something, this game looks really cool. You know, and if you need an excuse, I'll have to ask my significant other.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we'll come back or something like that. Or if that person was with you, it's like, all right, let's think about this and we'll... You know, maybe come back later in the day or something. You can easily, you know, dismiss yourself in the situation. There's one other question that sometimes people will bring up is leaving a game in the middle if you're really not enjoying it. In a demo, I think that's easier.
Yeah.
In a different game, you're going to have to fake a emergency phone call.
I would say don't sign up for a long game without doing your research. If you want to play something like Twilight Imperium, you are getting, like, don't just do that.
It's do a long, your long research. Game.
You are in for a long haul. Make sure that you have a familiarity with it at least before you go into the room because if you decide you don't like it after an hour, you can't leave.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, so James posted on the Board Game Geek thread, I'm planning on volunteering to run a couple games at our local convention. And it's my first time. I would like to run 2 tables for a day. One would probably be Blood Rage and the other would be Twilight Imperium. So unless I can get my hands on Twilight, he's going to run Twilight Imperium 3 unless he can get Twilight Imperium 4. Both are 2 of my favorite games, and I think that I can teach them well enough for new players. So what I would, again, just circling back, do not run them at the same time. Allow yourself at least an extra hour from where it would normally take to play. So Blood Rage can typically be played in under 2 hours easily. Give yourself a 3-hour slot for Blood Rage. most people are not upset when their slots ends early at conventions.
Yeah.
It's like, great, means, I have some free time.
I can go to the bathroom and get some food.
Yep.
Awesome.
So, yeah. What they don't want, you never want to run over a slot time because that interrupts the next person who's supposed to be at that table. It interrupts their next games. It, like, always estimate high.
Yeah.
Twilight Imperium, I think, honestly, I would estimate 8 hours for that game. If you really want to do a full game of Twilight Imperium, you're looking at that amount of time because you are going to get a full table of people who have never played this game before.
And maybe that's the caveat. Maybe you, if you really want to play that game, you should ask for experienced players and you'll have a better time. I don't know.
That actually, that's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you want to sit down and play.
Right.
It's like, I will be playing. We're looking for 5 more players. And this is going to be a major event. So that's the type of thing that happens when you're playing something like Twilight Imperium, where it's like, oh, there is a ton of time commitment here.
Right.
Actually, Anne had some really good responses, too. So James had some, let's say, do you think that's too much? Not necessarily, as long as you don't do it at the same time. I think we've covered overlooking. What should I do if a player behaves badly or is causing trouble in general? Cross your fingers you don't run into that. But if you do... Just try to do your best people's management skills, right? You're not going to be like, you, out, you're done.
Right.
So there are easier ways to manage that.
It's tough. It's tricky. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the sullen player who decides that they've lost and they're, like, they're just sitting at the table with, like, that bad attitude. You know,
honestly, at a convention, I don't care about that player. And I mean it. Like, if Kitty's all pouty, I'm going to be upset because that – or I'm going to be a little bit more sensitive because I have to deal with that later. If someone is at a convention game is losing and they're upset because they're losing, I'm like, whatever. This is –
there's not much you can do to change it as well. It's not like, oh, here's the 3 tips and it will turn them around. It's like they're going to be in that funk.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can ask at the end of a game, though. It's like, oh, what did you guys like about the game? Don't ask about your teaching style. What did you like about the game? What didn't you like about the game? Keep it focused on something that's not personal. You don't need to go into any game and say, this is the first time I've ever done this at a convention. It's okay if you do, but don't focus on it. Just pretend like you're the master and the expert there because that's what they see you as when they come to your table.
Yeah.
And if you're a player, when you go, just assume that the person teaching knows what they're talking about. They could teach you a completely different rule set than what's in the box. That's fine. It's still a game.
Yeah.
You might have had fun with it. You might not have. It's, it's an experience. It's fun. What tips would you have for me to promote the best experience for people playing game at the table? Again, just have fun. Try to keep things moving along if you can. Encourage people to it's not the end of the world. There's nothing you can do that's going to like destroy the game.
Have some tips for first turn moves.
Yeah.
Especially games where your first move can really dictate strategy for the rest of the game. Have some like, when I play, I like to do this, or here are some, like, here's 3 different moves that all work well for this game, whatever. Just have something in mind for that first player who's looking at you like, okay, you just told me the rules, now what?
Yeah. I always like a bit of strategy, like, tell me how to do well at this game.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Especially in the first turn, if you're not playing,
yeah,
it's easy to help all players equally.
Yes.
So you just, again, you talk to the board, not talking to individual players.
Exactly.
And whatever you do, do not make any assumptions about the person sitting there. And I mean this as in kind of the inclusive gaming atmosphere. You might have some guy who looks like he's the smartest gamer in the world and you don't need to give him any help. And then, oh no, this person over here that doesn't look like they know what they're doing. This is the first time ever. Don't make those assumptions. Talk to the board. Talk to everyone in the same way.
Yeah.
If someone has a question and they want more information, let them ask you. Don't make those assumptions.
Yeah.
So everyone is the same, period, when you're dealing with gamers in general. Well, anybody, really, but especially when you're trying to teach a game, because it's so easy to like fall into this, oh, I have to give you special attention because you don't look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So unless they're asking. If they're asking, then totally fine.
Yep.
So talk to your board often. I don't know. Should I be worried about you? You've been talking to your boards.
Talk to the boards. Talk at the board, not at the players.
They'll be nicer to you if you talk to them.
And I want to get to Chris's question, too. He says, my wife and I are registered at Origins and Gen Con this year and are definitely looking forward to demoing some games. So I am interested in playing side of the topic. Also, I have just one short experience playing a role-playing game, and my wife has none. I hear conventions can be a good place to try out RPGs to see if you want to try more. Do you have any tips on what to look for when signing up for an RPG event as a beginner and what to expect? So, well, we talked about most of this stuff. Dungeons & Dragons organized play is probably the best. If you're doing it at Gen Con, you're probably going to need to sign up earlier. Origins is a little bit. Actually, Origins is really fill up as well. Both of those conventions also have an indie game room.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I really liked that. I've done that twice now, and that was really cool.
Yep. These are games that are much smaller. The books can be anywhere from like a piece of paper to like a little pamphlet to what they call small book games. These ones tend to focus more on the role-playing and the story than mechanics, where your Dungeons & Dragons, your Pathfinder is going to focus a lot on mechanics. So if you really are looking for a story-type game, that can be good. They don't tend to allow you to select your game. You just get in a line, and then they assign you to a table. So the stories, you have a little bit control over what type of game, but... yeah, it's not going to be the...
Yeah, I had a few choices, but you're right. It wasn't like I could choose anything. It was like three or something.
Yeah. So, but like I say, D&D is the safest one. And it'll kind of give you a feel for it. It's more game-like, too. So it's easier to approach if you're used to board games. Say more game-like. There's more mechanics that you can hide behind, and you don't have to be like, I'm going to act like my dwarf character, and I'm an assassin. You don't have to do that. You can just play the mechanics. All right. I think we have probably talked as long as we can on this topic.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see here. If you want to follow us on social media, you should. I'm going to post a picture. I have a new painting table in my game room, so I'm going to post a picture of that on Twitter. So our Tabletop Game Talk Twitter handle is @TabletopGameTLK. You can follow me directly at Game Master Chris. You can follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. And you can always support us on Patreon. Get there directly at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. And if you are a patron, you automatically get entered in all of our giveaways with extra entries depending on your level. If you want to leave us an iTunes review, please do. We have a couple of reviews, but it's just been the stars, so I don't have any names associated with them. And on that note, Josh, take it away.
Indeed. Well, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, if he gets up, we'll all get up, it'll be anarchy, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe NG, Chad Covey, and Reynolds. Until next week, when we talk about the perfect game store, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Time to go feed the baby.
Time to feed the baby.
Parenting for the win.
Yeah.